brother. What's up?
This is a new big party, man.
Yeah, brother,
dig it.
Stop right on.
Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Sam. How you doing? Is it that thank God it's Friday mode?
It sure is. We're getting ready for an exciting weekend around the shot. You know, we're having Friday Night Live tonight with Crudy coming out live from right downtown. So come hang out with us if you're interested in that. That's the first one. And then Saturday, we're also doing the farmer's market for the first time. So we're going to be busy. We're going to be excited. We're going to be out there and hope to meet all of you.
So inform me about Friday Night Live with Crudy.
Yes. So this is a little Waukesha thing for any of you outside of Waukesha or maybe that don't know about Friday Night Live. I believe it's like the 15th year. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But it's just a little festival that downtown likes to throw where they do a bunch of live bands at most of the restaurants. I know People's Park. And I know Mainstream Bar and Grill, they do a stage as well. Just a good time to get out for good food, good entertainment, good live music. And then I know this year they are kind of barricading the whole event area for people to be safe. So they're closing the streets off and allowing people to just kind of go about their business.
Is it like in a park?
It's the actual streets.
The streets.
Yeah, so they're on the corners of the sidewalks, and people just kind of sit outside and listen to the bands and get some good food.
So I would say this. I know Sandy, it's Friday, so Sandy Williams is here. Sandy, I'm sure you're going to cancel all things that you have scheduled this Friday to go hang out with Crudy at
6 to 8, you know?
Well, it's hard to say no. Waukesha is just a very cool city. I've been coming out here. I've been spending more time here than I had in the past, but it's very quaint. It's really different than the city of Milwaukee. It really dates back. Much of it is older. You know, the downtown, immediate downtown.
I think quaint is a perfect word for it. Yeah, I do. It's very, very cute.
Yeah, well, you know, we got to check it out. And
Friday, we're going to be there every Friday as long as it goes.
So these barricades, will they keep me safe from Crudy? Or
no, he's loose. He's out loose. You got to be aware of your surroundings on that one.
I'm pretty sure at some point in time, I'm going to be.
Got to have you as a guest host. Yeah, we're going to mix it up every week, have a new one.
I'm pretty sure
it'll be a good time.
That'll happen. And Sandy will co-guest host with me.
Absolutely. I think that's how we get him to come.
Yeah. Okay, great. So let me say this, Sandy. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well.
You look good. So the got to start with the Celtics. And I'm biased. And I'm biased only because, like you, they beat the Bucks. And as much as it hurt me to see them beat the Bucks, they're the real deal.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have friends whose reaction to the Celtics beating the Bucks was to hate the Celtics and hope they lost. My view is no. They beat the Bucks. Let them be first, and we'll claim second. We'll just say that we came the closest to beating them.
Well, listen, they're a great team.
They proved that against the Bucks. They were tough. The best word for them was tough. They are a very tough team.
They're a complete team. Last night, they showed again just how tough they really are. You know, I watched the first quarter. I saw Steph Curry break a record. He had 20 points in the first quarter.
Well, the two teams together, I just heard on the radio, had something like 41 threes.
Yeah.
It was a record for threes.
Curry had six by himself in the first quarter. He had 21 points in the first quarter. And then I saw the stats, and he ended up with 34.
Yeah.
Because the Celtics, if they can't do anything else, they can play defense. And they can shut a guy down.
You know, I don't think the coaches in the NBA get enough credit, at least for these really good teams. I don't think Budenholzer gets quite enough attention for what he's been able to do. And this guy for the Celtics is a first-year coach. He should be getting lots of attention. I mean, he's taken the Celtics and figured out how to – I mean, defense is something that you coach. It's not something that teams naturally just play without a coach.
But I'd also say to you, the Celtics – you remember a guy named Danny Ainge?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. He built that team.
Remember Ainge when he played for the Toronto Blue Jays?
Yeah, you know, I remember him, but it can't go unnoticed that as a general manager, he's the guy who's responsible
yes,
for that.
Yes.
Because over, I don't know, maybe about 8 or 10 years, he made some shrewd moves, acquired a whole lot of first-round draft choices. And he wound up with Brown and Tatum and Smart. And so he's got a solid, solid young team.
You know, my ancestors, my dad came from Salt Lake City. So I've followed Danny Ainge since he played for Brigham Young University.
Yeah, I remember him playing for Brigham Young University.
Yeah.
But he's the guy who, over all those years, they had all those draft choices. I think at one point in time, they might have had over about a 4 or 5 year period, about 15 draft choices. So, you know, he failed on most of them, but he certainly wound up with the goods when he got Brown and Tatum.
Yeah, it looks to me like the NBA has become, it's not all draft choices now, it's assembling pieces. It's a little bit like the labor market out there. We've talked to Sam about this, where you have to be fully trained before you get a job. Now, just like you can see the Bucks, you build a team around a couple of top draft choices. When you find the franchise draft choice, then you just plug pieces into that basically annually almost.
But I think that scheme comes in second to having all these draft choices. You saw the Grizzlies.
Yeah.
And they've got this young, dynamic team. And it doesn't always work. You can look at New Orleans, and they've been getting a lot of draft choices.
Zion Williams, everyone was just coming apart at the seams. He was the next coming. And unfortunately, he can't seem to leave the dinner table.
Well, he's still a young kid, and he has the goods, and he's going to be a great player. The Sacramento Kings is the team I'm thinking of. They've been getting these first-round draft choices every year forever.
Yeah.
And they haven't gotten any better. So it doesn't always work unless you got the right management in place. And speaking of the right management, I wanted to hear your opinion. We haven't talked at all, Sandy, about the gubernatorial race in the state of Wisconsin. And I wanted to start by talking about, you know, Tim Michaels, Rebecca Clefish.
Well, first of all, let me just say my reaction to management is, if it ain't broken, don't fix it.
Okay. Well,
and the current management seems to be Wisconsin doesn't seem to be broken. No one really has found anything to complain about based upon the current Evers administration. So my hope is that whoever we're going to talk about on the other side doesn't prevail in this
election. People on the right find something that's wrong with him, even though most of us, and even others on the right, don't seem to think that he's all that bad.
Well, your spouse can always find something wrong with you, but that doesn't mean it's actually really wrong with you.
The dickens, you say. but I'll tell you something, Sandy. Rebecca Clefish, Kevin Nicholson, and now Tim Michaels.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of bloodletting in their debates and who's going to come out on top. In the end, they think that they're going to have an easy road to hoe in defeating the governor. But you look at the state and where it is, and you can say whatever it is you want to say about his leadership style. But for a guy who never was engaged or involved in government other than as the Secretary of Education, he's kind of done a good job.
Well, like I said, I think the fact that you've got a governor who is not regularly in the news might suggest that there isn't that much going wrong, right? If there were a lot to complain about, there'd be lots of daily news about the alleged errors or the actual errors that he was making or the problems we were having that aren't getting fixed. You know, when Tim Cook took over Apple, everyone said, who's Tim Cook? And he's not exactly a charismatic, out-in-front kind of a guy, but he's probably the top CEO in the world right now in terms of what's his performance.
Yeah, there was talk that the guy who died young from Apple.
Steve Jobs.
Yeah, that Steve Jobs couldn't be replaced.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. This guy's not as charismatic, but they haven't lost a beat, have they?
No, and haven't they not lost a beat? They've gained some beats. You know, it's under his leadership, Apple is biggest market cap company in the world and hits home runs annually.
All right, we've got to go to a break. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. Back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, we haven't talked much at all about the gubernatorial race on the state level. You just got through saying what I echo, the sentiments that Governor Evers is not a flashy guy. He's not in the news all the time. He's a quiet guy who gets the job done, and you know, people may say, well, he inherited, you know, a great situation at the state level. When he walked in, you know, things are going great. And this is what I'm hearing from the Republican side of things. But you can say whatever it is, and he's been lucky. He got the ARP dollars, and he got this, and he got that, and, you know, and the state was in great condition, great shape when he – that sounded like what Donald Trump inherited,
well,
right?
I'm not sure the state was in great shape when he got it, but it may, you know, they might say it was on a trajectory to be in good shape. But, you know, he inherited it at a very kind of risky moment in the general economy and in probably Wisconsin's situation too, and had to work through some dicey issues with the university. Yeah, I mean, you know, these three people that are running have – you seem to have singular credentials. Clayfish, I'm not sure what that credential is other than having been lieutenant governor. But then we've got Nicholson, who can only point at the fact that he was a veteran.
Yeah.
And Tim Michaels, who points at his business background. People with a business background would say the same thing I did, which if it ain't broken, don't fix it. And I'm not sure they'd be replacing the CEO of a company that was being operated as well as Wisconsin is currently being operated.
So that's the point that I wanted to talk with you about. People are riding the coat now. I'm a business guy, and he pokes his chest out. I'm not an average politician. We heard that from Ron Johnson. I'm a business guy. We heard that Donald Trump. I'm a business guy. Put me there and we'll do everything great and everything. We'll run the government like a business. Can you run the government like a business?
Well, it's a different notion. I think
you've been on both sides.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I do think that the approach to business could be the approach to government. But as soon as you get, like we've talked about before, I keep talking about how this country ought to go through a business like Six Sigma self evaluation and start operating itself like a business. But when politicians who are businessmen take over a government, they tend not to operate like businessmen. Did Donald Trump behave like a businessman?
Absolutely,
you know,
not.
Would you hire Donald Trump to run your business after you watched him perform for 4 years?
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. So I think,
even in his own business career before he became the president.
Well, yeah. I mean, the fact that he was a businessman didn't mean that you'd want to hand him a dollar and
right.
let him manage it for you, because you might not get it back.
Right. You know, Sandy, that has been successful for Republicans. You don't hear Democrats saying, "Vote for me, I'm a business guy."
Oh, I'm not sure. I think that the other states have seen Democratic candidates who are successful business people, who are respected and possibly get elected because of the respect people have for the way in which they manage their business. That's kind of happened on both sides of the aisle. I do think that. Performance in whatever it is you did before you were in politics ought to be evaluated to figure out what kind of a person you are and what kind of wisdom you display when you're asked to make decisions.
So today or yesterday, Tim Michaels.
Well, let me just say, though.
Okay.
Evers isn't a regular politician either and has always been a manager of things. He's had to manage
right.
large departments in the past. And schools are pretty big businesses, actually, to be administered. So I think really administrative skills are what's required, as well as listening skills for someone who's going to be a governor or a president or whatever.
So when you talk... So Tim Michaels got the endorsement from the grand poobah on yesterday, Donald Trump, and it's almost
is he going to be able to wash that stain off?
So, but they're celebrating this now.
Well, of course,
that you know he's been anointed, and I don't get that, Sandy. I know that Trump still carries some measure of respectability in certain circles, but isn't it more and more tarnished? And should you look at that as
I'm trying to remember the name of a musical. There was a famous musical about a baseball star who was a baseball star because he cut a deal with the devil.
And I remember that.
And the devil made him a star baseball player who everyone revered until the truth came out. You know. And, you know, the devil did that. That was an anointment that was done secretly. This is an anointment that was done publicly. So my analogy here is maybe pretty clear.
Yeah. I mean, you still think that, you know, we're, what, 3 years out, 2.5 years out of the 2024 elections, and people are still trying to ride the coattail. Excuse me, of a guy who we don't know where he's going to be. I mean, with all the baggage hanging over his head, any other time you would run from a guy like that, right? In history, you'd run from that guy.
Yeah.
Why are people still running to him?
It dims my mind. Maybe that's something has done that, dim their mind, and that's why they are. You know, I had the feeling that he was successful to the extent he was as president because he was willing to basically bend to private interest groups and to do their bidding, whatever it took to get their endorsement. So, he clearly was not a person of principle with respect to religion, but he bought the religious right by agreeing that he would take and appoint good judges that conform to the religious right's desire for conservative decisions. And he seemed to do that in all sorts of areas. So he's a person of very flexible standards. And I don't know why an endorsement from someone like that would be worth the paper it was written on.
You know, Sandy, you go way back. You've been involved in government. So you know a little something about how government works. And when you have a guy like Donald Trump, who right now the Republican Party is divided, either you're going to be with this guy or you're going to run away from him. And so depending on which side, which faction wins, that an endorsement by by Donald Trump may be your death knell.
Well, I think that there are those sensible folks in the Republican Party, and happily there are a good number of them. It just doesn't appear that they're anything like a majority right now, who are worried about the fact that this bromance between the Republican Party and Donald Trump is going to be the death knell of the because, like I said, I think they see it like I do, which is can we wash this stain out in the long run? And I think that's going to be a problem.
You know, I was listening to conservative talk the other day, and they were celebrating. Well, Donald Trump may be coming here to campaign for, Tim Michaels, and we can't wait till he gets here. Donald Trump is coming. Hey, Donald Trump has been here before.
Yeah, the Grinch stole Christmas, too.
And I really don't think it's that big of a celebration if he comes, maybe to the right, some people in the right, but not to others. We've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. Sandy Williams is here. It's Friday. We'll be back.
It's been a long time coming, but I know change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. Sandy, there's some places in the state of Wisconsin where gas is now $5.
Yeah.
And climbing. I know Biden is meeting with
Saudi Arabia
to get them to pump more gas.
We were talking about deals with the devil before.
To get them to pump more gas, more oil.
Yeah.
Sandy, even if that happens, it there is no magic pill. This is not.
Well, like I said, though, actually, this is the way it feels when you're dealing with commodities, but price goes up, and happily with commodities, the price goes down almost as rapidly as it goes up. So, when things switch, the problem with what we've got going on with oil is this temporary friction where it's hard to – if you picture the market, the world market for oil as if it were the ocean – and people are withdrawing water from the ocean, and the amount of volume of water that's withdrawn from the ocean every year is the same, then it doesn't have much effect whether the water is withdrawn from the United States or whether it's taken out of the ocean from Africa. It doesn't make much difference.
Right.
But if the ocean has got compartments in it, if the U.S. has a compartment that it's withdrawing water from,
it'll soon be empty.
It could be empty,
right.
Okay? And so what happens in the world market is ultimately the infrastructure for distributing oil redistributes the oil so it's more like one big ocean again, and the compartments get reconnected in a way that takes care of that. So when China and India and these other people start buying oil from Russia in spite of America's admonitions not to, and that oil gets consumed, those places will stop consuming the oil they were consuming, and they'll start consuming Russian oil. Like I'm saying, it's a finite volume of oil, and it's more or less, and it's a finite volume of oil demand. It's just a question of how those compartments are set up and whether they're reconnected or interconnected. So the marketplace, it'll take a year maybe or a year and a half, but it'll resolve. Now, I know you're going to look at me and say, yeah,
what do Tom, Dick, and Mary do about oil? Hey, Sam, are you is that good news to hear it's going to take a year or a year and a half for the gas prices to come down?
I can afford a year and a half. No. I'm going to cry. I'm going to cry.
Well, no, but here's the other thing that's going to happen, and it's interesting. There was on the news this morning.
Sandy, you're my guy, man.
No, but it's not going to take a year and a half because there's another bitter pill, okay, which is recession. Okay, so when the demand drops for oil and gas because of recession, the price will go down too. Now, you can say, well, if all we're looking at is the price of gasoline, that's good news. But if what we're saying is that the pill that's going to make the price of gasoline go down is a recession, that could be bad news.
Well, yeah, because they'll be suffering in other sectors.
Exactly. And so it turns out that recession is going to be a cure for a bunch of things. I was listening to a sophisticated podcast talking about how are we going to cure the shortage that's that are created by the supply chain, okay, the parts, all of the shortages in parts. And one of the answers was, well, there's a recession, and when as this recession deepens, the demand for all these parts will drop, and we'll suddenly have enough silicon chips, for instance, because the demand for them has fallen. Well, that's a bitter pill, right? That's like saying death can cure disease.
You know, Sandy, you talk about my wife went to look for a car, and there were no cars to be had.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's still amazing to me. Right. I mean, we know it's been, I don't know if that's ever been before, but that's not going to get fixed overnight either.
Well, not only is it not going to get fixed, but it's a little bit like the COVID pandemic. It might well be that it's going to change the whole way that automobiles are sold, because in the past, automobile dealers would spend a lot of money and have a lot of working capital that they would devote to having lots of cars on the lot. And then they would sit nervously all year hoping that they sold all those cars on the lot. Now the only way you can buy a car in most car dealerships is to order it and to wait the 6 weeks or 8 weeks that it might take for the car to be made and sent and delivered to you. But those dealers are still making a good markup. In fact, the fact that they're in short supply means that they aren't going to negotiate with you over the price. You're going to pay the full sticker price to order that car. They aren't going to have to devote any working capital. They're not going to stay up at night wondering whether they're going to sell their inventory. They're not going to have much inventory. It's kind of the model that Amazon has going for it, which is basically that they're selling, that they're a throughput portal to sell things. And everyone knows that automobile dealers make most of their money in their service departments anyway. They don't make money from selling new cars. They make money from selling used cars and their service departments. And now the public is maybe going to get used to this. So I'm just telling you, get used to the notion that you're not going to maybe go to the car dealer, look at 10 different cars, ask your wife which color she likes best, and then buy it.
You're saying this may be a permanent change.
Yeah, it's going to be permanent. I think it will be permanent because I think it's going to make a lot of economic sense. It's going to be a reduction in fixed costs for car dealerships without and really sacrificing profit, and it'll be a reduction in risk as well for them. And so, yeah, my prediction, Tesla started this model. You know, you don't buy Teslas from a car dealer. You order your Tesla over the internet, and you wait whatever the weeks or months are that are the waiting time to get that car. And the other thing is, when you order a car, you do get it exactly as you want it. So all you have to do is sit with your wife and ask her what color she wants, and she'll get it.
You know, Sandy, I remember when the car dealerships, like you said, were full of vehicles.
Yeah.
And I remember they would have to pay interest at the end of the month on all the vehicles.
Every car, absolutely.
Yeah, that they had on the lot.
Yeah. It was called floor plan. It's called floor plan financing.
And so it's better for a new car dealer now.
Yeah.
He stands a better chance of making a long-standing profit than he does that some guy's going to come in off the street.
Yeah, it's just a question of the public getting trained or retrained to be accepting of the notion that, and you know what happens if you really need a car, well, then you'll buy a used car, which incidentally they make more money on used cars than they do on new cars. Used cars don't have an MSRP that gives you a lot of data about what the costs were to the dealer. You don't know what the dealer paid for that used car that he's selling to you.
So my wife is not really happy about having to order and wait. People have gotten used to in this country now.
Yeah, instant gratification.
Right? You know, hey, I see the car on the lot, let's go get it.
Yeah.
That is all of these changes, Sandy, coming in our country, And all at once, it's nothing marginal about these things. They're just all at once, the world is changing.
And of course, you know, working at home changes the amount that you commute in a car. I mean, there's probably a lot happening to the car industry right now that's below the surface, and that maybe the demand for new vehicles is going to decline some too, because if you don't have to get in your car every day and drive to work, maybe that's going to change the extent to which you want or need a new car.
So there'll come a point in history when they'll point back to these times and see that, you know, business is a different reality now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, right now there's a lot of contest going on about places trying to bring people back to the office to work. Elon Musk just announced that you couldn't work at Tesla anymore if you didn't start coming to work and spend 40 hours a week in the office. And people will quit if they don't like their job enough. And in today's climate, with plenty of jobs available, apparently, it's going to give people the opportunity to make choices like that.
Let's do this. Let's go to the phone line. Sam, who do we have up?
Bill from Oconomowoc.
Hey, Bill, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Just fine. You guys do a wonderful job. Say, on car buying, my wife just bought a new car, but I'm sure your listeners know, I know you guys know, the only way to shop...
I don't know. Looks
and you can get... Well, let me finish. You can get such a variety from new to used, whatever you want. You know they got factory warranties. You get the color, you get that. My wife didn't shop online. She went to the dealership, and she knew what she wanted, and they happened to have it. But it's more consumer-friendly online, I believe, because when I first started doing this, which was a number of years ago, they didn't want to honor what was online till I quoted them the VIN number. Now, I don't think they do it that way. But the consumer is, you know, miles ahead, just staying home and figuring out what you want. And I think you can find it. I really think you can find it. The other thing you were talking about, and I just shared with a bunch of other people, this work at home. Back in the early 2000s, I was allowed to work from home after retirement. I actually worked for the Michaels Corporation, but I worked out of my house. That is just so user-friendly to the employees, I think, and just makes almost too much sense. It's something that I would call a progressive way of looking at things. What do you think?
Well, I do think a bunch of businesses found that they were, in fact, missing a beat in terms of the efficiency of the output that they were getting from their workers, even though the workers were working at home. And I think lots of organizations have set up processes in which they can try to get the best of both worlds. I think many working organizations have 3 days a week in the office kinds of ongoing routines where people can choose to spend 2 days, and maybe it's always Monday and Friday that they spend at home, and the middle of the week they spend in the office. And many companies in the service industry found themselves highly productive during the work at home period. So, and those are places that are looking at the output from their workers more than they're looking at the hours spent by the workers.
But then, Sandy, why would they need all of the real estate? Overhead.
Well, they don't. And in fact, the whole real estate industry is trying to figure out how to react to this new process. Buildings that are being built today have different configurations for the office space and large offices. Many industries, even down to the accounting industry, the legal industry, are trying to figure out how they will reshape their offices and how they will reduce the square footage per employee that they have to rent. But there's no question that the average square footage per employee that's required for commercial office space now has been reduced materially.
Hey, Bill, thank you very much for the call. Wish I had more time. We've got to go to a break. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. So
surrounding areas has been a bit of a hot mess this year.
It did the dumb
listings
thing.
Are being picked off above asking prices and without the home inspection contingencies. I'm Todd Osborne, owner of Orion Inspectors.
It'll be 20 seconds.
Okay. Even if I weren't a home inspector, I'd still cringe a little if any of my friends or family tried to buy a home without an inspection. Let's take a look at that house before you sign. Want to know more? I'm here to help. OrionInspections.com. That's Orion, like the constellation, inspections.com. If you think you need a home inspection, you probably do. Hi, I'm Todd Osborne of Orion Inspections. And buyers, sellers, and even flippers, I'm talking to you. Knowledge is power when it comes.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Friday, that means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, before we went to break, you know, you were doing an analogy about what's really happening with you know, the office space and the businesses and what's going to happen with all that space. And you were talking about a...
Well, I was saying that the real estate industry before, you know, buildings that were constructed immediately before this pandemic were built based on planning that was related to the number of square feet per employees that was being used and the style of use that was ongoing then. And now this new work at home process has really changed that and reduced the square footage per employee. You asked me about a big building built in Milwaukee and, well, you know, what was going to happen with all that space? And I said, well, Mom bought you a pair of pants that were way too big. And she's not going to have to buy you another pair of pants for a long time. That's sort of what, I mean, someone who's built a big building, Northwestern Mutual's built a building, and I'm sure if they'd have built it today, it wouldn't have needed the space they've built, but they'll grow into it. I mean, that in particular is a highly successful business that will have growing space requirements, even with shrinking square footage per employee.
So all of these things that have been happening, we're not going back.
Well, we're not going to go completely back. Obviously, there are, like, Elon Musk, who's going to require workers to come back. They intend
He's kind of an eccentric guy, though. I mean, I don't...
Well, he's kind of eccentric, but I'm not sure that that's necessary. You know, there is a value to putting workers together, and particularly if you're, you know, the ad industry created this word ideation, meaning the process of people sitting around in a room and developing ideas and using initiative and innovation together. And that doesn't easily happen when people are working from home. So I think businesses that are based upon ideation, to now adopt that word, do require togetherness. And Apple is trying to make sure that their workers assemble and interact with one another. They aren't going to require that happening daily, but they do want that to happen.
So when you were on Wednesday, you talked about a new business model. This is kind of a new business model, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, the sort of the magic of the marketplace generally is the fact that it evolves organically. It doesn't evolve by somebody up top telling us what to do. It evolves to relate to new circumstances in a way that people find to be advantageous. And that's what happened during the pandemic. I mean, people needed to work. Necessity was the mother of invention. That's another way of saying things evolve based on the circumstances, and this is what's happening. But the beauty is that through this evolution, we kind of, through trial and error, figure out the things that maybe work better. It's Darwinian.
Well, here's a prime example, Sandy, of this Zoom thing.
Right.
People used to have to come fly from San Francisco to Wisconsin or San Francisco to New York.
Yeah.
For a meeting, stay in a hotel, you know, the expense account. Now, I don't know. Nobody ever asked me to do that. I mean, but I'm sure you were one of those guys.
Yeah, but there's no question. You know, business people traveling don't pinch their pennies. I mean, they might not spend profligately, but they don't pinch their pennies. And so you take a plane flight, and a plane flight for business is not price sensitive. You have to leave at a certain time in the morning, and the airlines have long known that. And when there are airlines that are flying from one place to another that's most regularly used by business people, the price reflects that. And furthermore, when you get to that place, you jump in a cab or whatever, you don't worry about that. You tip the cabbie, you go to a restaurant, you order exactly what you want to eat. The business of travel has long, the grease of that has long been business travel, and there's no question that business travel will be materially reduced. It's a little bit like what happened to the private club business back in the Reagan period. There was a tax reduction bill passed, and one of the parts of that tax reduction bill to increase revenue was to make club the costs of clubs, or membership in a club at least, non-tax deductible. Well, what happened to clubs at that point? All the downtown business clubs began to fail because they no longer had that kind of business traffic. And that's going to begin to happen in a way. It's already, restaurants have suffered some. Hotels, you know, the level of hotel construction pre-pandemic was very high, and we're now going to probably have a surplus of hotel rooms based on the level of travel for a business.
So you and I are going to talk about a little bit later on in the show about restaurants that are starting to fail because they say they still need some additional help.
Well, it's interesting. This has been a perfect storm for restaurants. First, COVID kept people from coming to restaurants. And now that people are willing and able to go to restaurants, and in fact, kind of eager because they're kind of busting out of the household, right? Like, get me out of here. Let me go to a restaurant. But they go to the restaurant. Now there's not enough workers.
Okay, Sam, you've got a text message. What's?
Yeah, Mike from Milwaukee is wondering what you guys think about the effect of this topic on manual laborers and union members and that type of thing, where he says that they don't tend to like the whole work from home thing. We think it's lazy.
Manual laborers
have to be.
They have to be on site. Right. So, I mean, I suppose they have to do their work where the work has to be done. I think the real question is, are people actually doing the work? And if they're actually doing the work from home. I suppose that's advantageous if one wants to be home all day. That wouldn't have been my preference.
So, Sandy, the business community is, they certainly know where the money's being spent and saved. They know how much money they're saving without having these expensive
offices.
People traveling all over this country. They got to see that impact their bottom line. They're never going back to that. I can jump on a Zoom meeting with people from all over the world. For heaven's sakes, people used to fly all over the world to meetings, right?
Yeah, just like we were talking about automobile dealers and the business model changing there. So you order cars because you don't have to have the carrying costs of having a big inventory. You know, that's what real estate, renting commercial office space is a fixed carrying cost. If you don't have to do it, you don't do it.
You know, you can... all of these things, again, as you stated, evolution.
Yeah.
And it's the sign of the times. All those other things are passe now. And so, nobody's going back to those things. And it is going to have some impact on the other businesses that benefited
from
that.
We've talked about it a lot, but technological change, social change has both positive and negative effects. Technological change destroys jobs just like it creates jobs. And the same with evolution. The evolution of society and societal practices both creates and destroys employment.
Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuning into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be back.